Welcome to my stories and journeys where the river flows. And this river is Avon Wisk, the Usk. Water calls to water. Here I come. There I go. Water calls to water. And water is always on its way. And that's worth remembering at times when you feel stuck or stagnant. Because we are mostly water. Yes, we're watery creatures, really. One way or another, flow, cascade, trickle, drip, ooze, sink, seep, evaporate. Water is on its way. It's on the move, even when it looks like it isn't. And I've been thinking about the conversation I had with geologist Alan Bowering in the last episode about how rivers run, how they find their way and change their way, and how we sometimes change their ways for them. We also spoke about how rivers meet and what happens when they do. And we were having that conversation by the Usk on the promenade in Brecon, which is a place where, to quote a famous fantasy author, many paths and errands meet. And the River Usk certainly has several significant meetings of her own here. Here comes the little River Tarell, following a bubbling path down through the beacons to join the Usk at the edge of town. And then just a short hop downriver, just near the castle, the Hondi arrives, bringing waters from Mynydd Epynt and also bringing a name, because in Welsh, Brecon is Aberhondi. So it's that meeting of watery ways that names the town. And here, of course, the waterway that we made arrives to join the party. The Monmouthshire and Brecon Canal, the Monbrec. The Usk's shadow. Our navigator forefathers, back in 1800, with all the muscle and stamina they could muster, began digging out the route that the water would follow, first to Abergavenny, and then very soon all the way to the sea at Newport. Like the Usk. Like, but not like. Water from the river is abstracted, pumped out to the canal, which nowadays, at times when the river's own water levels are low, is an extra and increasing pressure on the Usk. The canal and the river leave Brecon quite close together, so I decided to make a loop for a couple of miles or so, out along the canal as far as Brynich Loch, and then back along the river wherever paths would allow. And in that way, I thought I could get a sense of the two waterways that share the same water and the same route, yet whose nature and journey is so different. The start of this loop is in the busy canal basin, where Theatre Brycheiniog occupies what were once the old wharf buildings. And if you walk out along the towpath with the canal to your left, down the slope of the hillside to your right, near, though not always in sight, the Usk is flowing in her own bed, in her own valley. Walking along the canal towpath is lots of fun on a sunny day. It's very lively. There are all sorts of people coming and going. There are families on the towpath and families on boats on the canal. There's a real sense of camaraderie. And the canal boats go so slowly that it's easy to chat to people on the water as you walk along the towpath. At one point we were accompanied by a special mixtape playing from a boat, a salute from the water to us pedestrians on the towpath, and we soon found ourselves cheerfully setting our pace in time to Walking on Sunshine, Walking on the Moon, and I Would Walk 500 Miles. And in amongst all the jollity and busyness, Mother mallards carefully guided excitable groups of fluffy ducklings in and out of overhanging willows, while getting thoroughly photographed from land and water. And really, accessibly flat and even for mile after mile, the towpaths could have been designed for strolling or jogging visitors, with the water beautifully near at hand, giving a sense of space even at the busiest times. Just perfect for the errands of unhindered leisure. But of course, they were really designed for very different paths and errands. And the signage along the way reminds us of the navigator gangs and the sweat of the brow haulage and the busy tram roads meeting here to carry their loads of minerals back and forth in a constant circuit. And so here they lie, past and present, the busy life of the canal in its industrial past and the busy life of the canal now with all its visitors. The canal and its towpath run flat and even and straight for much of its length because that's how it was made. That's why it was made, to run dependably on its endless journeys there and back again. And all the while, down the hillside to the right, the Usk flowed then and flows now, intermittently in view, intermittently in earshot. And at Brynich Loch, after you've stood for a while, watching with interest as the boats are raised and lowered to continue their journey, you can turn and retrace your steps to the canal basin, or you could make a loop and after a little while turn off down the hillside and return nearer the river. If you do, you're likely to find yourself more or less alone. Not so many people at all come this way. In contrast to the straight canal, here the river meanders, spreads herself out. The Usk is a spate river, a changeable river, rising and falling quickly with the rainfall and other climatic conditions. If you look at this section of the Usk on a map, you can see that she has many stony patches, giving her a lace-like appearance, and shallows bubbling and frothing over stones are in marked contrast to the still waters of the canal. You will pass back under the A40, which straddles both the canal and the river, but there is no even, straight footpath here. The path nearest the river is bordered by electric fences in some places, and it runs mostly in fields, a little way up from the river. It'll run you past a sewage treatment plant as well, eventually. No, not so many people choose to walk this way. But where there were families of ducks on the canal, zigzagging under the willows and coming to see whether there are any tasty titbits to be had from the passing visitors, here on the river, on the far bank, there is a whole community of sand martins. Their nest holes in the red banks of the river are like a series of little desirable waterside apartments, quiet and undisturbed, and the birds themselves busy flying in and out, busy with their own paths and errands, far too busy to take much notice of anyone else. Now, if after completing the loop, observing both the canal and the river, you then choose to return to Brynich Loch, behold, you will see that the canal is lifted up high and crosses the river by means of an aqueduct. Having taken the high road briefly, the canal then comes back down to earth on the other side of the river. And from there, if you want to continue your walk 5 miles to Talabont, it is the canal you will have to follow for most of the way, with very little choice about it, because there is no path that follows that section of the wide and meandering Usk. Still, they are both headed to this next hub, this next meeting of ways, And you are likely to be familiar with Talabont-on-Usk if you are an enthusiastic canoeist or a climber of Penavan or a mountain biker. But in fact, there's another little tricky name thing going on, because Talabont-on-Usk is technically Talabont-on-Caerfannell. Yes, the Usk skirts away a little to the north, while the nexus of canal and aqueduct and road and tramway is squarely on the Caerfannell. You remember I said how tempting it is to follow some of the Usk's tributaries back to their own source? Well, the Caerfannell is definitely one of those. It's one of the Usk's more excitable tributaries, and it has waterfalls, lots of them, an adventure in themselves. But we are not going to turn and go upriver and explore the waterfalls, no, because we're carrying on to reconnect with the Usk, which isn't going to take long, because the Caerfannell carries on and very soon joins the Usk again, just above Talabont. And in fact, we will have to leave the canal and just do a short bit of road tramping, cross the bridge over the Usk, and then scuttle across the A40, which isn't much fun, and we will have arrived at the little hamlet of Llansanffraid. Llansanffraid juxta Usk, a short distance but a world away from the activity hub of Talabont. Llansanffraid is a quiet place, and it would be even quieter if it wasn't for the A40. Here, on the slope above the road and above the river, amongst the ancient yew trees, stands an old church. This church has been rebuilt several times over the centuries, and it is dedicated to Saint Fride, Saint Bridget, which means that the original church to stand on that ground may have been from the 9th century, when monks were travelling to Wales from Ireland, and churches dedicated to Saint Fride, Bridget, sprang up along the west coast of Wales and along the banks of rivers. On the Mynwy, the Mono, as we explored in season one, and also here on the Usk. South Wales poet Ruth Bidgood, in her radio poem Hymn to Saint Fride, links the path of the river and the saint, saying, Saint Bride's Llansanffraid, in her old valley parishes, her name strikes like a bell through silence. Sing, Usk, sing now to greet your saint of rivers. Appropriately enough, Saint Fride is the patron saint of poets, amongst other things. And coming up from the river to visit the church, the voices of several poets were playing in my head. And in the churchyard is the grave of the 17th century mystic poet and physician, Henry Vaughan, through whose poetry and through whose entire life the Usk flowed. Henry was a twin, and he and his brother Thomas were born and raised just along from the church, in sight and sound of the river. And both in their ways were dreamers, imaginers, explorers of the way the seen and unseen world interweave. Thomas was an alchemist and a priest. In fact, he was a priest there at Llansanffraid for some years, at a time when the canal lay almost 200 years in the future, and the A40 another 200 years again. The brothers, for a while, were caught up and swept away in the Civil War. But Henry returned to his birthplace and never left again. He continued to live and work as a much respected country doctor and a poet. And as a poet, he became known as Olor Iska, Alarch Wisk, the Swan of Usk. Ah, yes. The swans of Usk don't stay away from our story for long, do they? In fact, it is a classical tradition to liken poets to swans. And of course, in Henry Vaughan's day, Shakespeare wasn't long gone, and he'd been newly christened the Swan of Avon. Henry also referred to himself as the Silurist, in honour of the native people of the land, who knew the river and her names, the tribe who the Romans struggled so hard to subdue. Sitting on the bench by Henry's grave, under the yew trees, quietly eating my lunch, I found myself thinking about the twin boys as they grew up in this place, playing in the woods or splashing in the river. Another South Wales poet, Anne Clusenar, wrote a sequence of poems, the Vaughan Variations, in response to Henry's life and work. And in one of them, she imagines the twins in the womb of their mother, Denise Morgan, who herself had been born and raised in Llansanfraid. She imagines the two embryonic boys tumbling and twisting, with knowledge of place and wild wonderings flowing into them through the amniotic waters. And she then goes on to envisage the two boys as babies by the riverbank, playing now in the waters of the Usk, their voices slowly developing. Toddler talk of twins down by that clear amber, half drowned in its hushed and hushing, the soft pour of those melting pleats, made and remade, same shapings in changing water, your mother's tongue. Ah, the soft pleats of water, when the Usk becomes gentle enough for babies to play in. What a beautiful description. And mother tongue and river tongue becoming one and the same. When it comes to Henry Vaughan's own verse, the style and formal qualities of his poems can make it a bit more difficult for us to connect with today. But the Usk in all her differing moods flows through it. In one of his poems, The Storm, he compares the sandstone red flood water that's really characteristic of the river in Spate to his own tempestuous lifeblood. And in his poem, To the Isker, Henry is very determined that his beloved Usk should claim a place alongside the great rivers of the ages. And he talks about how poetry hallows a place and how poets can add reverence to the places they live and love and demand that we give these places our attention. Isca, when I am laid to rest hard by thy streams, and my sun sets, where first it sprang in beams, I'll leave behind me such a large, kind light as shall redeem thee from oblivious night. Thinking about how voices can raise reverence or awareness for a place, for a river, is a pressing question today too. Henry may have spoken about oblivious night, and voices raised today may speak more in terms of phosphate pollution. But in a sense, they're both parts of the same chorus over time. A while ago, I took part in a march through Brecon organised by Save the River Usk to draw attention to the state of the river and call for action. And I made a banner to carry on the day, which said, "What happens to the Usk happens to us." So many rivers and coasts now have voices organising, drawing attention to pollution, demanding change. Both the Usk and the Wye have such voices speaking out on their behalf. And although the struggle seems monumental at times, the variety and strength of these voices is growing. And since we're still in Banau Brycheiniog here, a good example would be this recent initiative from Banau Brycheiniog National Park inviting people to sign a pledge to add their voices and their actions in support of the rivers. Here it is, the Love Our Rivers Pledge. I promise my allegiance to the River Wye and the River Usk. I promise to love them and make changes in my everyday life to help protect and restore them. I promise to join a community dedicated to preserving their natural beauty and health for both current and future generations. I pledge to love our rivers. Or, as Henry Vaughan put it, in all thy journey to the main, no nitrous clay nor brimstone vein mix with thy streams, but may they pass fresh on the air and clear as glass. I'll leave behind me such a large, kind light as shall redeem thee from oblivious night, and in these vows which living yet I pay, shed such a previous and enduring ray as shall from age to age thy fair name lead. And then there is an invitation to sign the Love Our Rivers Pledge. Well, this little section of our journey with the Usk seems to have been busy with paths and errands meeting and also echoing with voices in the quiet and in the bustling. Navigators and tourists, the engines of canal boats, swans, poets, campaigners. And throughout, the waters of the Usk have been moving in and out of our hearing. But I'm feeling a strong call to get closer, to see what can be heard, what can be discovered by listening more attentively to the river herself, in her flow, below her waters. What's waiting to be noticed there? And who is doing the noticing? But for now, this stretch of the Usk at Llansanffraid is journey's end today, I think. And I'm just going to add a verse to the other voices that are echoing here with these few lines I made a while ago, because this feels like a good place to weave them into the river's flow. I washed my bones as white as moons. I scoured them in the gravel bed. I rinsed them in the waterfall. I hung them high upon the branch. I packed them close. I carried them upon my back inside a dream. I made my way the river's way. Bright bones cascading back upstream, and skin and bones I came to you, to lay my body in your lap. The river's lost, the river's found, the call from far, the long return. Thank you for keeping me company on my journeys and stories where the river flows. And I'll see you again on down the track.